Good evening. I wish to call to order the Public Works Advisory Board meeting of Wednesday, January 20th. And first we take the roll and we ask people to say their names as we go around.
Hi, I'm Jane Wilsbach.
Bill Olson.
Barry Dorfman, Chair, and Jane is Vice Chair.
Noah Smuckler.
Roger Ewing.
And Dan Glessman.
And Vicki Landis, by prior notice to us, our seventh member and immediate past chair, was not able to come tonight. The next, we'll have a moment of silence.
Is Adopt a Shelter Cat Month, and it's also not coincidentally kitten season, so the shelters are nice and full of wonderful cats and kittens for you to adopt. A very, very big selection, many choices, and also kind of a crowded situation for us, so it's a good time if you want to make a contribution, if you've been thinking about adopting a cat or kitten, a wonderful time that you can impact the crowding and the numbers and help us out a lot. There are four shelters that I know about: the Animal Shelter on Highway 1 next to the Sheriff's Department, Heart up in Cambria, Homeless Animal Rescue Team, North County Humane Society, and of course Woods right next to the Animal Shelter. This also is a month when we have some discounts. Woods is discounting the cost to take out an adult cat. And Heart is also discounting the cost to take out a cat on selected cats. Let's see. I also wanted to tell people to remember to look for your lost pets at the shelter, because I know that you may have a tendency to think, oh, well, a coyote has gotten my cat or something awful has happened. But in reality, most of the cats that are up there are found. They're lost. They're not turned in by their owners. For example, there is a beautiful Maine Coon cat right now, just gorgeous, very friendly, found in Morro Bay, and I'm sure somebody lost it because it's just a gorgeous domestic animal. And last of all, I volunteer at Heart and the Animal Shelter, and I'd like to encourage people to do that. We can use you for anything, just to walk dogs around, to socialize cats. Anything that you could possibly do would help out a lot. Thank you.
Thank you. Noah, and you can refer, we got it up on the screen there. If the camera can, at an appropriate time, switch to the screen to talk about the announcement of this workshop.
And this is a workshop that's being put together by the California Construction and Industrial Materials Association, and the county is also promoting this event. It's focused on the environmental tool of pervious concrete, which is it's a technique of concrete pouring where you actually increase the absorption value of the concrete itself. And it's very similar to the current technique, but there are some tweaks. And actually, the city is going to have a representative at the concrete workshop, which is great. But we'd like to get information out there to more people that are interested and potentially may be pouring concrete in the future, especially technicians, which is who this workshop is focused on. And following the workshop, you have the chance to become a certified pervious concrete technician, and that's certification through the CIMA, the California Industrial Materials Association. So the event is July 19th in San Luis. It's $35 all day, and that includes lunch. And the information will be up in the planning department of the city if you'd like more details for that. And it's a really exciting tool that we hope to incorporate more to help solve some of our stormwater runoff issues and actually enhance our groundwater supply. So I encourage you to check that out.
I noticed the announcement in city official.
No.
Okay. I wish I had that in my yard.
It's never too late.
You've never taken out concrete. But Are there any other announcements? Okay, well, then we'll move on to written communications, and there is one we have from the bike committee, which we will simply mark as received, unless anyone has any particular dimension they want to pursue.
Just that they have for their next meeting will be June 6th.
And June 6th?
June. Well, they're promoting it as June 6th here, so I would guess they meet every month, so it would be July, first week of July. But if anyone's interested in being involved with the Citizens Bike Committee, Robert Davis would be the person to contact.
Then this is the time for public comment on items not on the agenda, and we welcome it, and we have a loose 3 minutes. And you have to identify yourself, council member.
My name is Betty Winholtz. I'm actually here as an individual city council member. I want to present the Public Works Advisory Board with some booklets that I've purchased with some of my contingency money. They're handbooks for tree boards, and I think we don't have a tree board, so I think it kind of falls to you and the Planning Commission when it comes to tree issues. I believe that you've got a subcommittee that's taking up urban forest management. And these booklets were purchased from the National Arbor Foundation, and they come in bulks of 25. So we have a bulk box here of 25 for each of you to have. You can pass them on to the Planning Commission for staff as well. There's also a number of single bulletins on various topics that I ordered as well. Some of them I think would work very well in the library, that individual people with individual land might want to know about, like what to do in a storm, resolving tree and sidewalk conflicts, how to save trees. And then the bulletins towards the back actually I think would address more the kind of work that you're going to talk about, like systematic approach to building with trees, how to conduct a street tree inventory. So I'm hoping that your subcommittee would welcome this and do what you think is fit to do with it, in terms of using it. And I'll put them over here, Mr. Lavick.
Thank you very much.
You bet. I would also like to give to the subcommittee $200 for any other things they might think they might need in terms of if they need to do a workshop or if they need other kinds of information. But I'd like for you to have that because we really want to promote the urban forest management plan. And then I'll give a balance of some of my contingency money to the purchase of some city trees, because there's a number of places downtown that are missing trees, public trees, and haven't been...
I'm not sure if you're familiar with that part of town, but it's right up the hill from Main Street and just north of where the old Shell service station used to be. When that extension of Sunset was made, there was a stop sign put at the end of it. Sunset Street coming south, the old Sunset, has no stop sign, so those cars can go straight through to the new Sunset on their way to Highway 41. Hill Street, coming up from North Main Street, has no stop sign, and those people can go straight through that intersection up the hill on Hill Street. There's a problem there. These people stop. These people stop. These people and these people don't stop, and there's going to be an accident. When they're coming up Hill Street, they can't see someone coming up Sunset, and neither of those streets has a stop sign. So there either needs to be stop signs at both ends of, you know, on Hill Street and let Sunset go through, or on Sunset and let Hill Street go through. Something needs to, it's going to happen. It's just waiting to happen. And it hasn't been a problem in the past because Sunset hadn't been completed through to Highway 41. It was blocked off there, so now it's completed through, and there just needs to be, somebody needs to look at that particular intersection.
What was the date of when it was opened?
What would you say? It's been about Yeah, 6 months to a year, I think it's been okay. That way. I've had some close calls myself. I live right down Sunset from there.
Because at those particular intersections were the subject of stop sign issues a couple years ago. That's why I asked the date.
Maybe when they were planning that development and planning to go ahead and run Sunset all the way through there, maybe that's when it was discussed. Now that it's done and in, the problem is obvious. These people can go straight through, these people can go straight through, and neither can see the other until they're right there at the intersection.
Are there any other public comments? Okay, I'll close the public comments and comment on how the usual process on the stop sign issues. They end up at this board, and usually it's up to city staff to say whether they're accepting the work. The first thing is, was this the same situation as was heard, and if not, what do you propose as a course?
I'm not familiar with the specifics of this intersection, but I'll look into the record of the intersection and the what the approval stated and evaluate the intersection for the stop sign warrants and determine whether we need additional stop signs or to remove a sign which may be needed.
That's fine. In the past, what has happened, I don't know whether you've followed other stop sign issues, what happens is that these warrants, there is actually a set of standards that's been validated by real experience. City engineer now a veteran of 2 months?
Almost.
So it may move a little slower, if you can give that to both me and Rob, that'd be fine.
May I make just a quick comment? I'd like to thank Councilmember Winholz for bringing this, taking the time, considering the thought behind it, taking the time to do it, and actually doing it. And I, on behalf of the board, we greatly appreciate it. This will be a great help for us. Thank you, Ms. Winholz.
And the next agenda item is a public presentation. A presentation that was intended with the public as an audience on the issue of undergrounding utilities. This is the first of what we anticipate will become a routine for the Public Works Advisory Board, and that's that as a board we identify things that, based on our conversations with the individuals in the city, I don't mean city government, I mean individuals who live in the city, is of interest at least to some, is not something that staff has the time to do or was directed to do, because we can't direct staff, only the city, only the city council, or if staff thinks it's within, such as like the stop sign, their direction to evaluate something. And we do our own staff work and our own publicity, and this is the first of, and later when we discuss what we call our agenda work plans, which is relevant to what the materials that Council Member Winholz left, because the urban forestry management is in our queue to hold a hearing on. With that intro, because I think we all should be pretty excited about the work we've put in to understand the process that whereby we can be proactive when there's time on the agenda, time in meetings. And with that, I turn it over to Dan, who was the lead person who did all the heavy lifting.
Not that heavy, but thank you, Barry. I have with me tonight Homer Alexander.
Turn the mic on.
Yeah,
it is.
It's on. Is this close enough?
Yeah, okay. We have Homer Alexander with us here this evening, and he is going to do a briefing on a project. And I'll try to enable him with some visuals. Can we get a picture of the first slide up here? Homer, where is this?
This is in the 300 block of Bernardo.
Let me
done some wishing here. If the wires went away, you get a view like that.
Can you switch those back slowly once again?
You bet. There's two more sets.
Oh, okay. That's really impressive.
Today and without the wires. Where's the next one, Homer?
This is in the backyard of the western side of the 300 block of Fresno.
Wow.
Okay.
As I go through this presentation, please don't hesitate to interrupt me and ask any questions you want. The California Public Utilities Commission ruled in 1967 that all new electric service must be underground. To start the process of undergrounding existing wires, the PUC established two rules, 20A and 20B. Rule 20A is undergrounding projects where funds are set aside by the utilities to be managed by the cities and counties and are available when undergrounding is, quote, in the public interest. Morro Bay has completed five 20A projects and is currently managing two others. These projects have all been in commercial areas. Rule 20B provides for limited ratepayer funding but requires that the balance of the cost be paid by the customer requesting the project. I am aware of two small 20B projects currently in process in Morro Bay. One is in the 100 block of Olive and the other in the 200 block of Main Street. A little background in the in our project. In 2001, a group attempted to underground the utilities in a large area that included all of the homes south of Ridgeway and west of Kern. Their group was known as Wires Be Gone. The Wires Be Gone group abandoned the project once they realized that only approximately 50% of the residents involved were interested. A group of neighbors, led by Al George, who live on the west side of the 300 block of Fresno, decided to continue the project only on a much smaller scale. The intent was to just bury the wires that affected their views. The wires that needed to be buried were located in the backyards of the homes on the upslope of the 300 block of Bernardo. I don't know if you can see from here, but the blue lines are the existing wires.
Do you have a pointer or?
Dan is our.
And he was armed with one.
These are existing wires.
And the black circles are the poles.
Pole.
So that's the limited project you were attempting.
That's the reduced project. Al asked me to sit in on one of his block meetings because I had just finished a major remodel and I buried the wires that connected my house to the system. After the meeting, I felt there was a potential to not only bury the wires behind me but also in front of my house. Our first contact was with PG&E Engineering in San Luis Obispo. They were very polite. Basically said they could not do anything without a relocation and rearrangement application. They referred me to their project manager whose office is in Templeton. I spoke with her on the phone, and she said that to get the process started, I would need to complete an application and include a check for $9,000. She also told me that the other two utilities involved, AT&T and Charter, would require something similar. During that telephone conversation, she advised me that under no circumstances would the AT&T engineer at the time grew up in Morro Bay and was an old friend of Al George's, so he agreed to overlay their requirements on PG&E's plans and give us a ballpark estimate for free. Charter required engineering and therefore requested a fee for service. Their charge for their drawings was $1,500. Knowing that we needed $10,500, we went back to the 15 neighbors and asked for $700 each. We then completed PG&E's relocation application and forwarded it to their project manager in Templeton in August of 2004.
I just want to clarify something. Of the three who declined, they didn't mind if you did it. They just didn't want to participate financially?
Or yes.
If they had said at that point, we don't want this to happen, we object, would that have stopped it? In other words, does everyone have to agree it's okay even if they don't fork over some money?
No, they do not all have to agree.
Okay.
In November, PG&E returned their drawings. We then had AT&T overlay their requirements and ask the charter engineers to draw their plans. The work was completed just after Christmas.
I'd like to show another slide on the easel. Yeah. The parcels that are in blue are the ones, the 18, I guess, that would benefit from a view enhancement. And because of the way the wires are constructed, there's the yellow parcels would also have to connect to the system, but were not recognized as having a primary enhancement of their view.
Okay. The significant part of that engineering plan is you're looking at a $9,000 piece of art. We set the plans to four excavating contractors requesting bids. This was a very frustrating part of the project. It took numerous phone calls to get the bidders to respond. Eventually, two did after 4 months. While we were waiting for PG&E to complete the engineering, we started to research the methods we could use to pay for the project. To get started, we met with Mr. Boucher, who gave us the basic information for forming an assessment district. We also met with the city finance director, Jim Kosher, who explained to us in more detail how to form the district. He also recommended we talk to a San Francisco law firm that specialized in municipal bond financing. This recommendation turned out to be very valuable. I spoke with a partner in the firm at length. He advised me that we needed an engineer to establish a value of benefit. He stressed that the engineer should be somebody that has done assessment districts since Proposition 218 was passed in 1996. He also advised me that because this was an assessment and not a tax, that the district could be established with a 50% majority. He recommended a firm in Irvine who had done a number of utility assessment districts. An interesting point about an assessment district is that the final decision by the homeowner at the time they were installed. The reason a benefit assessment engineer is needed is that some of the properties within the district will receive a greater benefit. For legal reasons, only a professional engineer can make this determination. The value of benefit that the engineer determines not only affects the amount the individual pay, but also affects the number of votes the individual property owner will get. As an example, because there's wires directly affecting my view, I might get 3 votes. My neighbor directly across the street, who only benefits from the safety feature of not having overhead wires and improved reliability, would only get 1 vote. In other words, I would get 3 times the benefit and therefore 3 times the votes, but I would also be responsible for 3 times the cost. We've got some pros and cons for establishing a benefit assessment district. The advantages are all the property owners must pay their fair share of the costs. Everybody in the district is required to connect to the new system. The cost is spread over the life of the bond, which is usually 10 years. Also, since the assessment appears on the individual's property tax bill, depending on the individual, a portion or all of the assessment is deductible. The assessment is against the property, not the owner. Therefore, if the property changes hand, the new owner is responsible to continue to pay for the bond. The disadvantages are, since the bonds are issued by the city, the city would take control of the project, In addition to adding time to the project, the excavating contractor would have to follow prevailing wage laws. Interest expense over the life of the bond would also be a disadvantage. There are several administrative costs associated with establishing a benefit assessment district. In our case, these costs total $77,000.
Excuse me, Homer, that $77,000 was for just the area that you showed originally, the Fresno, Lucita?
Yes. The $77,000.
Is this for the 18? Okay.
It would total 33. It totals all the people affected.
Yes.
So there's 18 with view enhancement and about what?
15.
Well, the ones that don't have view enhancement. It was a total of about 33 parcels.
There's 33, yeah. The yellows and the blues up there.
Oh, that's part of it. Okay.
According to the benefit assessment engineer, even though the yellows don't have the wires in front of their view shed taken away, they do benefit by having improved reliability and by not having overhead wires in their driveways. I didn't realize this till I got involved, but our fire department will not cross a down power line.
I don't blame them.
So if you're on the other side of the down power line and you need our fire department, you just wave at each other.
So it's 77,000 divided by.
But what's important there, Roger? That is actually an administrative cost.
Oh.
That this
prevailing wage would not be an issue. You would also have more flexibility to determine who pays and how much they pay. In an assessment district, there is no flexibility whatsoever. If you pay cash for it, one person could decide that they wanted to help out their neighbor, for instance. The disadvantage, and this is a major stumbling block, is there's no method of enforcing homeowners to connect to the new system. So basically, you could build the new system, and if one individual, for whatever reason, decided they didn't want to connect, the PG&E would not turn the new system on.
But they would still get their assessment.
No, I'm talking about if we just paid cash.
Oh, I see.
What we're comparing here, Barry, is the two avenues. One is by forming a benefit assessment district, having 50% of the affected people vote for it, it will happen. But it takes time. It takes city involvement, and it has higher costs because of the extra involvement of the city and so on. The alternative, if you said, hey, I want this done in my lifetime, is just pony up money and pay for it out of pocket, and that would be divided up amongst the people who chose to pay. What Homer's saying is the disadvantage, one of them is that you'd have to get some kind of a legal requirement signed by the all parties that they would accept your money and hook up to the system before PG&E would shut off the power. It's a challenging job.
Basically, one is unanimous among the neighbors, and you have to have all the money up front to give.
That's correct.
And the other one is the assessment district, and you just need the majority assessed with the weighted votes by benefit.
But keep in mind, the ultimate decision is the city council's. So that
in either case?
No, only in the assessment district, because they wouldn't be involved
if you
pay cash for it. They're not involved at all. The other concern, too, about paying cash for it up front is as you're going through the project, you could have some key people drop out. So the few that were left could end up with a bigger and bigger piece of the pie, kind of a domino effect. The cost for the project that we worked on in 2005 dollars, as you can see, was $536,000. If only the 18 homeowners divided the 536 equally, it would be $29,700 apiece. And that's just to circumvent the block and go down Lucida a little bit. In addition, the individual connection fees range from $3,000 to $9,500 apiece. These fees would include the electrical panel conversions of anywhere from $600 to $800. So For the average homeowner in our block, the number was, in 2005 dollars, was approximately $35,000, which is really not, in my opinion, an outlandish amount of money, considering what all Dan needs to do is show you a couple of those pictures again, and it, you could spend $35,000
through this for 14 months and come to the conclusions that you've arrived at. If you had an opportunity to do this, would you do it?
Yes.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
What as a board can we do for you to help expedite?
One suggestion. Moving forward through time, new construction, extensive remodels, say a significant dollar amount, be required to provide on the property the undergrounding, such that at a time a trenching in the street was available, they could hook up easily.
Do you know, Rob, if there's anything in current codes or anything in process that heads in that direction?
City Municipal Code does require for significant remodels, new construction, to underground the service from the existing overhead to or existing underground to their house. With subdivisions, if it's over an acre, there's a requirement they provide underground utilities. If it's under an acre, then it becomes a could become a condition of approval that would be recommended to Planning Commission to require undergrounding.
But that undergrounding is not removal of the pole, it's just the wires from the pole to the house.
To the house, and that, with a subdivision, it would be the undergrounding
of
the overhead utilities,
yeah,
yes.
Of everything.
It's my understanding that on remodels, the city doesn't require even extensive remodels. Only on new absolute new construction. There's been a lot of new homes built that were, quote, remodels in the last couple of years, and they've all got, most of them have overhead connections.
Yeah, I think there is an exemption in the building code that allows for overhead service to continue.
One of the suggestions might be, just to start the process, because you have to start somewhere, is that maybe on remodels over certain dollar thresholds that you would require undergrounding. To the connection, so at least to be ready.
Sort of in the same mode that we require curb, gutter, sidewalk for extensive remodel and or new construction. Same principle?
Same principle.
One other question, if I may, please. I had a property up on Pecho, and it's very similar in utility hookup as your neighborhood. The poles are in the backyard of each running down that line. And I believe it was, I can't remember whether it was the phone company or PG&E that came in, but they had to put in some new poles in the back there. They categorically refused to remove the old pole. I couldn't get them to get rid of the old pole. They were willing, and they needed to have an easement onto my property to do so. And over time, that old pole got eaten up and surrounded with ivy, almost like kudzu in the south, and you could no longer see the pole. Squirrels loved it, but the plant kept growing above and beyond the pole. And was
I mentioned Al George earlier? Call him because he worked his magic and got two of them removed from his property.
Good. I wanted to clarify: is the city doing what you were saying would be a help if it were required?
We ran into a little bit of a stumbling block. Our neighbors agreed to go to the next step, which was to hire a benefit assessment engineer. The problem that we have now is we don't know how much the cost in an assessment district would be for each individual property owner because, as I said earlier, their benefits are different. Plus, I have no idea what the costs are for the people across the street that would have to connect to the system. So the benefit assessment engineer agreed to get us at least far enough along to get to those costs. But keep in mind, the city was the one that was going to have to hire the benefit assessment engineer. Well, the city decided that they wanted signatures from all the people that needed to connect to the system before they would hire the benefit assessment engineer. We were going to pay for the benefit assessment engineer, so the city was out. There was no money involved. It would just be our funds to the city, the city's funds to the assessment engineer. So we were kind of in a catch-22 where it was very difficult to get a signature from somebody saying, would you agree to do this, but I have no idea how much it's going to cost. So we're now reviewing it again and seeing whether or not we're able to put this thing together and pay for it ourselves and keep the city out of it.
If you
and still end up a benefit assessment this
no,
time.
Not have it, no.
And then do the cash.
Right.
Which is not as now, the city wanted everyone who would be in the benefit assessment district to agree beforehand to go through with this process.
They didn't want everyone, but they wanted as 85%.
And that kind of undercuts the benefit of a majority being able to do it.
Yes, and I said if I would have been able to have at least gone through the first phase of establishing the, having the benefit assessment engineer tell us how much each property was going to be assessed for, at least I could go to the neighbor and make and have an intelligent conversation with him. But without knowing what that individual's actual cost was across the street.
And you can't do that privately before you approach the city.
No, what we would do if we did it privately is all those connections we'll just pay for them ourselves.
No, I meant privately get the benefit assessment.
No, you cannot, because the issue with the benefit assessment is the city's the one that issues the bond.
No, I meant privately get the benefit assessment and, in essence, pay for it twice.
No, it's against the law.
Okay,
that's in Proposition 218.
You're saying there may be something about city policy here that may facilitate this to bring city policy more in line with the state law that allows a majority.
Yes, and I don't know what I was encouraged, and then at the very end, I was told.
Okay, I understand. Now that's a policy issue, not an engineering issue.
Right. That's correct. He highly encourages undergrounding because it's easier. There's no chance of lightning hitting a transformer or things of that nature. I mean, you've all had power outages. And undergrounding greatly reduces that.
Okay, Roger, I just want to check with Rob. Would you have any comment on what Noah was raising, whether there's any belief or evidence that it's more efficient in terms of transmission?
That's really outside my area of expertise. I'd be an electrical engineer. Okay. I'm a civil engineer and land surveyor.
That's fine. Just Roger, you...
Yes, thank you. One more question. Homer, if more people other than just the 18 in this area, let's say you wanted to expand the area, would that decrease the cost per resident?
Sure.
So it would be beneficial to get as many people in the area, as many homes.
Well, it's a very difficult thing to manage because you've got to convince 18 people that or some number of people that they want to spend a lot of money, and you've got to do that on a one-on-one kind of basis. I think the reason the Wires Begone project failed is that in the area they tried to do, there was 140 homes, and they just it's just almost impossible to get 140 people to agree on anything.
Do you have a starting point?
We're trying to get it. I think that if we can get one of these done, that other neighborhoods will see the benefit.
Right. And,
when you see these pictures and you actually go stand in front of a home that doesn't have phone wires, it's just a terrific, just changes the whole perspective of what you look at.
I would agree. To go back to what Noah was raising, besides the visual benefit, if you could demonstrate a benefit to better power usage, safer power usage by having them underground, less shortages,
less opportunity for wires to be coming down, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there's a safety factor, a health factor, as well as an economical factor.
I can't speak to the loss of energy, whether the wires are above or below ground. But I can speak to the fact that PG&E was very specific about the reliability and the safety features.
Are there any other, Jane? Bill? I want to thank you very, very much. There's a notice up there. Turns out that we haven't had and expect not to have any audio for the entire meeting. The notice, and we didn't know it, or they somehow weren't aware until these kind people who chose the interest came from their homes to say, where's the audio? And didn't say anything because you're on a roll, and it was very effective, and it will be on the replay, though, and be on discs. And I hope that based on what you said, we will revisit it. It is not lost. This will be replayed, and we'll make sure it's
all of the Photoshop work.
Very good. Excellent. Come to the microphone, please.
In the microphone, because the audio is being recorded. It's just not live at this point.
Television screen did not pick up the laser pointing at the neighborhood depicted on that chart on the easel. And since there was no audio, it might be helpful at least to get a visual image of what they were talking about. Because when they were looking at that, I looked up the screen, and it didn't show. So there may have been a problem directing the camera to that location. It might be necessary to move the chart over into the screen area, because we know the camera can pick up the screen. So whatever would work, but I know that the viewing audience did not see that.
It would be nice if you could eliminate the wires as easily as you did on the photographs.
Yeah.
But thank you.
The
all.
Photographs were seen, and I think that was the most telling part. I don't think we can go back. It'll be so out of context. Oh, there they are. I thought they were up before.
Okay, let's take a crack at it.
Well, just show the name.
The streets here, this is Ridgeway. This is Bernardo. This is Luisita and Fresno. And so the homes that are shown in the blue where the pointer's moving are the ones that have the view enhancement benefit. The homes adjacent that are shown in yellow are sharing whatever connections available. So they would be required to hook up, but recognize it would have a lower benefit. Their benefit would be in the area of the safety and reliability factors. And, of course, they're in a benefit assessment district, their costs would be greatly reduced.
Did anyone have any other questions? Well, if you come to the microphone, we're a little loose here. This will be on TV starting this weekend, and discs will be available. I'm going to find out at the library how soon after the normal time is. And did you have a comment or a question?
I didn't have a question. I did have a concern. I'm Dr. John Parker, and I'm a professional archaeologist, and I understand that Morro Bay has a lot of archaeological sites, and when you talk about digging and undergrounding things, the hair on the back of my neck starts to go up. And I think, you know, if we talk about these things at a neighborhood at a time or a district of the city at a time, you know, an archaeological inspection of that neighborhood or that district, you know, prior to the final plans for undergrounding should be done, so that if there are, we're trying to get something like this done, the city could have something like that done as part of a city thing, and then it would be all taken care of. Okay. Just a suggestion.
No, a very good one, actually, to certainly start thinking about.
You have an estimate for such a study?
I don't have a clue.
Moving on in the agenda, and remember, even though there's no audio, it's still being recorded, so behave as usual. And the next item is the consent calendar, the approval of minutes. And are there any changes or comments on the minutes? I would like to add one that, and I'm not sure, just it would be a line at the bottom saying all of the above actions were by unanimous approval of the board. So that it isn't that people, that because our process isn't that someone says, oh, I want this in the queue, it gets discussed and everyone agrees. It happens everyone did rather than a minority. Could you just add that line at the end, and is that acceptable to everyone? Because I think that was our process.
At the end of the board agenda work plan, at the end.
Yes,
at the
just say the above actions were by unanimous vote. And so I move the minutes with that change be accepted, or look for that motion.
I'd second you, Barry.
Well, actually, it's usually he moves.
You second.
Second.
All in favor?
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? None. I should could have counted that it was all ayes. The next item is the director's report information item, the information items, and we're going to continue with the process we started last time, which was to receive the report and ask city staff if there's any particular item that they think is important to highlight to us that we especially need to be aware of or is very timely for the public, and then we go to the members of the board if there's any particular items they want to clarify.
Rob Leivick, City Engineer. Just since we're on the subject of undergrounding districts, want to point out that undergrounding district number 7 is in PG&E's design queue, and the resolution that was passed by City Council has that district, which is a portion of Main Street and Beach Street, completed sometime mid-year 2010. Undergrounding district 6, we're doing research to see if we can get that back into PG&E's hands for design. They felt that it did not qualify for under the 20A, that it didn't meet the scenic corridor requirements. So we need to point out to them that it does, and that it is the purview of the city to direct the utilities to underground.
And that's in those districts are in contrast to the type of district they were talking about. These are the ones that draw on the money the utilities have, correct?
Correct. These are 20A districts that are of regional benefit and basically regional view sheds in transportation corridors, undergrounding, and they're paid for by everybody's paying for them by a certain amount that's on the electrical bill every month.
Thank you. Are there any other items you wanted to particularly highlight?
I think everything else is sort of flowing along routinely. I can try to answer any questions that the commission may have.
Starting with Dan, starting with you, go around. Any questions on any items?
No.
And
no.
You get to come back if you. Roger? Noah?
Well, I read it all. It makes sense.
Jane?
My usual comment. On the Harbor Walk project, it says that it looks like we have enough money. The bid was low enough that we have enough money to do the scope of the work. But what's the schedule look like for that?
The project right now, it's been awarded to a contractor. The contractor is preparing their submittals and we'll be applying for the final coastal development permit, which involves the contractor submitting their stormwater plan to the Coastal Commission for final approval. I don't have precise dates on that, but we're in the fairly routine portion of the project, getting all their submittals in and getting those to the Coastal Commission.
And when would construction start, theoretically?
I believe they're planning for sometime near the end of summer to start construction is their schedule.
I ended up with a question here. I forgot. On that harbor project, on that walk, I noticed that the bid came in about $150,000 less than the available money. What happens to the rest of the money, the other $150,000?
The project manager, in his addressing of City Council, is going to attempt to use that to extend the Harbor Walk project for as many dollars as it will extend the Harbor Walk project for. He doesn't think he can make it to Beach Street, but they're going to push it just as far as they can with the available dollars. He'll have to hold a little bit back for contingencies in case there's any undetermined conditions, but stretch those dollars as far as we can.
That's great. Noah, and then I know Roger also.
This is a question. I don't know if you're aware, Rob, but under the Morobe-Keyukas Wastewater Treatment Plant Joint Powers meeting, do you know, it says in here May 24th, which was our last meeting, do you know when the next meeting is scheduled?
No, I don't, but you could give Bill Boucher a call and get the date on that next meeting, or Bruce Keough.
Okay, and for members of the public that are interested, the City Council has this issue on their ongoing meeting agenda. So,
when you say this issue, you mean?
The sewage treatment plant upgrade. So they will most likely be discussing this at the 25th. And
yes, it is agendized for the 25th. City Council meeting also.
Roger?
Yes, thank you. Rob, good evening. On the roundabout, do we have a construction start date on that yet?
I don't believe that we have a construction start date on the roundabout yet. I think we're still getting contractor submittals. I don't believe they've had a pre-construction meeting on that. But if you want to give Mr. Boucher a call, he is more up to the day-to-day activities in that project.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Then we will then move to all business, which is the Board Agenda Work Plan. We have our basic
Sorry, we have our basic grid, and I'm going to, if you'll be able to, can I borrow someone's? Or do you have an extra one, Kimberly?
Here.
A grid? Okay. I'll leave this. I just need one to read. I'm going to put
one up there.
Yeah, could you put one up there so the public sees what we're doing? Because we discussed this document, and today is 6:20 at the top, and our process is that we don't discuss substantively topics because they're not properly noticed, but we're discussing trying to fit topics such as the presentation tonight into our agenda. Our understanding, and I look to Rob if you have any additional information, our understanding and is that we expect the Joint Transit RFP award to be on the agenda next week, and I spoke to Janine and about that. She expects next month that to happen. And do you know anything about the sanitary sewer sewage management plan, whether that will be ripe? Interesting word for sewer management.
I'm not sure if that will be ready or not, but as soon as it is ready, we'll put it on the agenda for discussion.
Yeah, my process has been, and I'll check with Bill whether he thinks it is, because if we're going to do that, leaves us with. If both of those are on, it's a fairly full agenda next month. If one of them isn't, there's time for one of our items. We have two in the queue, but before we discuss moving those up, I know Noah had another one he wanted to propose for the queue, which is the first thing we're going to do, is propose additional ones for the queue, meaning that we're committed to fit them in like we did the presentation tonight. Noah?
Yeah, and this is in follow-up to our discussions with the nitrate water notification plan that we recently visited, and I had a discussion with Bill in regards to our water supply and the city's plan in case of an emergency or a reduced amount of water supply. And he referred me to the Urban Water Management Plan, which is available online. And in reviewing that, I was pleased because I felt like it was exactly what I hoped to find. And it's a document that was last really put together in 2005 from my review, and has a lot of great information laid out as far as what the city's plan would be and some of the future potential options we may have for times of a water crunch and planning for times of a water crunch. So I feel like with our current situation regarding our groundwater supply and also our Department of the State Water Programs situation, it potentially is a really good time for us to revisit the Urban Water Management Plan and discuss some of the details in there as far as other water supply options we may have, and also just to get some more information about where the city staff sees us currently as far as some of the levels that the Urban Water Management Plan lays out. So
I want to clarify, are you commenting on what's in the queue, the water shutdown management plan, or kind of reshaping it to be a bit broader?
I would say the two are almost the same, and we may just want to adjust this
wording
to be the urban water management plan.
And within that would be water shutdown.
Water shutdown.
But what you're saying is that it's hard to separate that from these other issues of what's happening with the groundwater in our relationship to state water leads right into the shutdown. Would it also include then the desal? And okay, are you? Let's switch to this. I thought we were going to go and say, are there anything to add to the queue? But let's continue with this. So you've done quite a bit of staff work, because actually there's quite a bit of reading and analysis. Are you think you're close to saying this is what a hearing would be and this is the information I could present?
I would support having the board take a look at it.
Definitely. Oh, no, that's already been done.
Put it in the queue, I mean.
It's already in the queue. It's already there. We'll just call it the urban. Is there any objection to relabeling water shutdown to urban water management the plan? Because that's...
You could say it's all about water, an emergency situation or... you know, as far as that's the part of
urban water emergency management plan. Mm-hmm. Okay, and this is based on the documents you got from Bill, which was decided at last meeting. So I think it's you're staffing it, and I know Roger is ripe with interest to help you on it.
I have a question, though. Why would you want to include the word emergency? Why not just keep it as water management? Because that covers
everything. That's water management. Well, the theme was the water shutdown and how you're dealing with it. That's how it started.
What some of the wording, there are some different parts to the urban water management plan. One is, and this is, you know, components to this. One is a water shortage contingency plan, water shortage emergency response plan. There's a worst case scenario, a 3-year plan as far as the process city goes through. And this is all excellent material that is,
I think really it's just the person doing the staff work is saying that the themes that are emerging that are most salient for us to at least first cut talk about are the emergency ones.
Well, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I think with the impending drought that we keep hearing about, this might be a very valid subject to deal with. And I would just call it water management plan, period, and let's review the whole thing.
That seems like it would be clear, and if someone's interested, you know, it's obvious what documents we're basing our conversation on.
Well, I think our spirit was, what are you doing in unusual circumstances, which include a 3-year drought? And I also think in terms of public interest, putting in the word emergency alert, since that'll be the great focus of it, I think gets more attention. And that was my thought.
I would support that, Barry, especially something that we have here is a news release from the Department of Water Resources, and they're talking about the state water supply. And one of the quotes in here is our current situation with state water is potentially reduced flow and availability, and what's the quote in here is this is a very important wake-up call for California regarding state water supply, and so that definitely is one of the reasons why we feel like this is a good time to look at this.
Frankly, sounds to me that if you had the pressure of a deadline, you're ready to put together the relevant quotes and sections of the plan. And this is our opportunity to examine something that's very important to educate us and the public at the same time. And what you said is really the preparations the city has made that look very, very appropriate. And it's an example of something we have the interest and therefore time to do that staff don't, to put together. But it all comes from existing documents. So it's we now call this the Urban Water Emergency Management Plan, and as the topic. And you say you're ready. And I think we need, based on Dan's experience, at least 20 days beforehand to get the proper publicity, to be sure. So that means I think what I'd suggest is at the next meeting, I don't think this is quite ready, you come with a sense of how long you think it'll take. So is it like an add-on to something versus a major component of the meeting like the one tonight? Is that agreeable?
Well, it's still all under the Urban Water Management Plan. But you can nitpick it to death, but it's still all in there.
Well,
I'm
not wedded to it. Who wants to call it? Someone make a motion to call it Urban Water Management Plan.
Or Water Reliability Plan?
Well, I think the spirit is you don't want the adjectives. It's just simply the urban, and that's the spirit, I think, what Roger was saying. And I have no problem, but it's what
I think it should be whatever the name of the plan is.
Pardon?
I think it should be what the name of the plan is.
Okay.
Would be nice.
Yeah, that makes sense. having heard the discussion, I actually disagree with myself before. Don't mind changing my mind. Does anyone object to calling it the Urban Water Management Plan? And that's fine. We'll call the item that. We can deal with its emphasis on emergency, including the drought kind of things, in the publicity on it. See. And so next meeting, you'll give us a sense of the time. Oh, thank you. And then while we're on items that are already in the queue, what is the status, which has been enhanced with some materials from Councilmember Winholtz, of the urban forestry management plan?
Urban tree forest.
Well, I didn't know the proper title.
Urban tree forest management plan.
Forest or forest tree?
Forest management.
That's what I wrote, but what's correct? And I misspelled forest anyway.
I believe it's urban forest management plan.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so I didn't know in my notes that, but we all knew what that meant. Betty acts like there's this active subcommittee that regularly meets, which, as we know, can't be under the Brown Act, even if it's just three people. But looking to Roger as a lead on that, that if you could do the same kind of thing at your own pace that Noah did, some sense of, or that Dan did previously, some sense of what would be the what would the hearing be about and the kind of things we discuss, and then it gets ready.
What I'm going to do first, we don't have a date set yet, which is fine, but I'm going to take a look at what Councilmember Winholz dropped off, take a look at both of these items, and then do a brief synopsis, get together with Noah.
And
we may invite, when we learn a date that you would like the board to discuss the urban forest management plan, then we will set up with some speakers.
Well, when you review that, I presume it'll be in conjunction with the ordinance that was passed by the city.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think the date is not that far off. It's kind of when you're ready. It seems it's like we have Noah kind of has a sense, and it'll be finalized next month and probably the month after that.
Due to vacations and trips soon to be taken, I would look for September, if that's permissible and agreeable by the board.
Well, we don't know you'd say you'd think you'd be ready, and we'll keep that in mind, but we don't know what'll be coming from the city.
True.
And we want to make sure we have time when board members put in the work.
As an update, I contacted the NEP, and Cheryl Lisinski is the Outreach and Education Coordinator.
Can you say what MEP is and then relate it?
It's the Morro Bay National Estuary Program.
Okay.
They've put together what's called a Bayside Living Guide, which focuses on a lot of different ways we can enhance and support the estuary and the quality of life we have. And there's a good portion of this Bayside Living Guide that's available at the National Estuary Program's office and in the Planning Department of the City of Morro Bay that deals with urban trees and landscaping techniques and other components of what would be part of a healthy urban forest. And so Cheryl is interested and willing to come in and be our potentially our first of a few presenters regarding proper landscape techniques that can really enhance, you know, our local urban forest and basically review those components of the Bayside Living Guide. So that would be something to look into as we get closer to scheduling the appointment. She is flexible to any of the upcoming meetings.
This is sort of under the It's really a new item. It's like review environmental info in the phone book, and we're really translating of environmental information general available to public presentations on it is really what we're talking about. And I'm going to change that suggested item to that. And what is her lead time?
I said asked her what she would be really comfortable with as far as the amount of time for a presentation.
Yeah. Both.
We talked about 10 to 15 minutes of actual presentation time followed by some potential questions
and
short discussion.
What's her lead time to know?
A couple weeks. She okay. said currently any of our upcoming meetings would fit, and we talked about potentially scheduling this towards the end of summer, fall, so it coincides mm-hmm. with the fall planting season, which is the recommended season for planting,
okay.
so you time it with the upcoming rains,
okay.
So it might fit in really nicely that way.
So everyone agrees, or there's no that the review of environmental information, the phone book, is now presentations on environmental information available to the public.
Actually, the way that started out was we were talking about recycling and what should be put in the recycling bin and what shouldn't
yeah.
be put in the recycling bin, and then it turned into review of environmental
yeah.
info and phone book, and so now I think it's going.
So back to what it should be. There's the recycling bin, but is there agreement that a presentation on the Bayside Living Guide, the National Estuary, using 10, 15 minutes time, put that in for,
right.
do you want to put it in for September or October? No matter what's on the agenda, I think a 10, 15 minute item can be handled. What do you think is better, October or September? October?
We could revisit this at the next meeting.
September or October. We're
yeah.
committed to that.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone agrees, so that's putting that in the queue for September or October. Then next month, we have one, maybe two items from the city. We have no items of ours, which is okay. And are there any other suggested any items that people want to suggest just to keep that list of suggestions? And remember, the suggestions are anyone can have a suggestion. It's what gets voted on is everyone or a majority agreeing we're committed to doing it.
When did you plan on having the water management plan looked up? Did we pick a month for that yet?
You can pick a tentative month. Do you want to pick?
Maybe August.
Well, I was going to say you didn't. You said there's nothing from us in August.
I think it's August. Because
Noah,
I think next month is too soon to get the publicity together. And
yeah.
Don't you agree?
Yeah.
So why don't we put that in August, knowing it can get bumped?
Can you be ready by August?
Yeah. Yeah. Knowing it can get bumped, but we'll know that next meeting. And so have the publicity ready. We understand, and I'll go over it. I learned from Dan what he did, and I think was effective.
The other potential presentation would be the review of the recycling guide in the phone book by a representative from the Integrated Waste Management. And I've confirmed that they would be willing and ready to do that when we feel fit. And that's another presentation that would be similar, 10 to 15-minute short presentation with questions.
Is everyone agree to put that in the spirit of looking for these short presentations?
I'd like to put it in.
Yeah. Anyone object? No. So that's unanimous on that. Consent. What is the lead time? Because if there's only one item next in July and I know it within the week, I will talk to Bill about the sanitary sewer management plan.
I,
there's,
I think we could potentially work that into the schedule with a week's notice.
Well, we want 3 weeks to be able to get the publicity.
Yeah, I can contact the IWMA representative and confirm that next month's meeting would be good for them. And
okay, and get to me immediately, and then I'll meanwhile simultaneously contact Bill. So that is on us to work that out.
Yeah.
And we'll discuss it next month when we'll do it if we can't get it in. Well, this is quite a bit of work. We've identified tentative months on two, I will say, major items, and have two other presentations. And again, I want to thank Dan and Homer, who's not here. This was our maiden voyage on trying to do this, and glitch notwithstanding, I thought went very well. The fact that there were individuals from the public who came in to tell us they couldn't hear it meant at least there was one family really who wanted to get the information. The next, well, is there any new, I'm an scientist, epidemiologist. I don't overstate the data. Any new business? Okay, hearing none, we move on to future agenda items. And what I, what I would like to suggest is that simply can be, see work plan grid, because it incorporates both, and I think over the last 3 months has had both what the city has done, because I speak with Bill to integrate it, because it is confusing. There may be a required format in this sequence, but it just, if it says see work plan grid, then individuals will know to look at that because there's a lot more information on the work plan grid as to what's coming than in the one-liners. Is that okay with everyone? We reflect to eliminate the confusion, because I agree with you. There's the next item is adjournment. There's the obvious next meeting is scheduled for July 18th. And there's the obvious motion to be called for.
So moved?
Let's go see the sunset.
Someone has to move.
Oh.
I said the obvious motion.
And I move we adjourn.